This is Boston Public Radio. I'm Kara Miller. We're sorting through the aftermath of Republican Todd Akin's comments on abortion and quote-unquote legitimate rape. He stirred up an issue that's been agitating Americans across the political spectrum for years, the issue of abortion. And we wondered, has the pro-life movement been moving further to the right over the years, or are Akin's comments really an anomaly? My first guest, Carol Jaffe, thinks a lot about this. She's a professor in the Department of Obstetrics, Gynecology, and Reproductive Services at the University of California, San Francisco, and she's the author of Dispatches from the Abortion Wars. Carol Jaffe, thanks for being here.
Pleasure to be here.
So let me start by sort of getting right to that question, which is, do you see the pro-life movement having substantially shifted where its center is over, say, the last 10, 20 years?
Oh, very much so. I mean, all social movements have both pragmatists as well as what we might call purists. There's always been people in the pro-life movement who believe, you know, a life is a life is a life, and a fertilized egg is a life, and therefore, even in cases of rape or incest, that does not justify an abortion. Historically, the pragmatists who may or may not have agreed with that, but knew that most American people would not agree with it, historically, the pragmatists have held sway. So, for example, when abortion was first legalized, the common ground was contraception. People like George Herbert Walker Bush, the first Bush president, was the sponsor of Title X, the Federal Family Planning Program. He was so gung-ho contraception, his nickname in the Congress was, quote, rubbers. Over time, we've seen that compromise break down. And what we've seen more and more in terms of acceptable Republican candidates, particularly starting with Sarah Palin in 2008, all of a sudden the ante became raised. The new normal to be acceptable in Republican races in most places, with, you know, your Senator Scott Brown being more the exception, was you have to oppose abortion for rape and incest.
Now, how do you explain that shift, that the shift from, let's say, a George H.W. Bush, who was nominally pro-life, although he did appoint David Souter, who was at that time probably going to be the swing vote, and Souter supported, did not support the overturning of Roe v. Wade. So how do we go from there to, as you said, Sarah Palin?
I think there's several explanations. One is that all social movements overreach. They have some success, so they want even more. And what we may or may not be seeing now with Todd Akin, depending on what happens with him, with his race, with other races, you know, this may finally be too much for the American people. There's that, but I think what's really more fundamental is that we are really a very apolitical country. I mean, when it comes to voting, in 2008 there was only a 65% turnout. In 2010, as is typical in off presidential year elections, it was lower. So only the most mobilized people vote. So politicians have to sort of do a two-step. Paul Ryan actually has identical positions to Todd Akin, with the exception that he probably doesn't believe in the ludicrous theory, you know, about women secreting hormones. But he, too, doesn't believe that there should be exceptions for rape or incest. He, too, has signed on to the Personhood Amendment. He, too, signed on for the distinction between, quote, forcible rape and other kinds of rape. You know, so what we're seeing is the ante being raised for those politicians who are going to get the Republican Party vote, which is overwhelmingly made up of social conservatives, with all the fuss we're hearing about the Tea Party. In fact, look what's happened since 2010 election. In state house after state house and at the federal government level in Congress, we've seen an unprecedented number of abortion restrictions being passed.
Let me turn... Sorry, let me turn quickly to David Bernstein, the political reporter for the Boston Phoenix, who has looked at how this has played out locally. And David Bernstein, I want to play you some clips from Scott Brown's response to Todd Akin yesterday. Let's listen to him.
I found those comments unacceptable, really outrageous, and obviously I've asked him to step down. In his pursuit of becoming a United States Senator. If my daughters, or God forbid my wife, were ever raped, I would do and provide any type of support I could for them.
David Bernstein, what did you think of Scott Brown's response? He was one of the very, very first people. I mean, we are nowhere near Missouri, but he was one of the first people to call on Todd Akin to resign from his position in the House of Representatives.
Yeah, I think that there's a couple of things that explain his eagerness. One is this is sort of an easy one for him to distinguish himself from the sort of negative national GOP brand, which is one of his biggest, one of the biggest problems for any Republican running in the state. And he doesn't have, he's done a very good job, and people know him personally. You know, people feel that they have a sense of him. So it's not, that part of it is not going to be as much of a problem for him this time around as it might be for, say, Richard Tisay running in a congressional race, who people might not know as well. Although he has a very, you know, left, you know, moderate social, moderate position on these kinds of social issues. But people don't necessarily know that, don't feel like they know him. But the other piece of this for Scott Brown is he doesn't want these kinds of issues to be at the forefront of what people are talking about here locally, because it tends to drive up the engagement of types of voters who are going to vote against him.
Well, interestingly, Elizabeth Warren responded to Scott Brown in a way that I don't know that I anticipated what she would say, but let's listen to it.
Scott Brown can't have it both ways. He is working for the national Republican agenda. That means no equal pay for equal work, birth control. The head of the party saying they're opposed to funding for Planned Parenthood, and the vice presidential nominee who says he wants to redefine what rape means. Scott Brown is in the middle of that.
David Bernstein, what did that feel like to you as a response from Elizabeth Warren?
Well, one of the main things that the Warren campaign is going to spend its time and a great, great deal of money on this fall is trying to portray Scott Brown as part of this national Republican machine, brand, whatever, that is very unpopular here in Massachusetts, in the hopes that, A, it will help sway those few remaining, you know, sort of persuadable voters in the middle who may feel all right about Scott Brown personally, but really do not like the idea of those Republicans being in charge in Washington. But the other thing is that she wants there to be a lot of discussion and debate about these kinds of issues, Planned Parenthood being defunded and so on, because that potentially turns young women, working women, single women from casual observers of a campaign to active participants in an election. And that could be the difference between her winning and losing, is if those kinds of voters who care about those issues, who don't necessarily think that Scott Brown is against those issues, but if they come to the polls, they're going to end up voting for Elizabeth Warren.
Carol Jaffe, let me go back to her for our final few seconds from the University of California, San Francisco. And let me ask here, you know, has the pro-life movement been successful in terms of, as they've moved to the right, have they moved the country with them?
No, and I think we're seeing, the reaction we're seeing to Akin makes that clear. And in fact, the polls show a significant rise in pro-choice support from previous polls. But again, the issue is who comes out to vote. So the majority of Americans do not agree, certainly, with the extremist pro-life positions. The question is, as your other guest, Mr. Bernstein, says, who will come to the polls?
Right.
That's what it's all about.
Thanks so much. Carol Joffe is a professor in the Department of Obstetrics, Gynecology, and Reproductive Services at the University of California at San Francisco and the author of Dispatches from the Abortion Wars. And David Bernstein is the political reporter for the Boston Phoenix. Thanks so much to both of you for being here. And Callie Crossley is back to wrap things up.
Thanks so much for joining us for another edition of Boston Public Radio. I'm Callie Crossley. Boston Public Radio is a production of WGBH.